Neroi, The Curse. When most people think of found footage horror movies, they think of the big ones like The Blair Witch Project or Paranormal Activity. But over the decades since Blair Witch popularized the concept, there have been countless different takes on it. The basic premise is almost always the same, that the film we're watching consists of footage taken from cameras that actually recorded the horrific events. A similar genre is that of the horror mockumentary, which often includes found footage, but stylizes it to be more of a documentary instead of just raw footage, such as in films like The Tunnel or The Bay. Neroi, The Curse is a bit of a blend of both, and was released in Japan in 2005, being notably a bit longer and less intense than many of its American brethren, but with no shortage of creepiness. Let's take a look. The film begins by informing us about a journalist named Masafumi Kobayashi, who had spent years chronicling supernatural phenomena and writing a number of books. Once he began utilizing video as part of his research, he was able to compile his findings onto videotapes. We're shown a series of clips from his tapes, with him interviewing various individuals after their encounters with the supernatural and traveling to haunted or otherwise paranormal locations. In April 2004, Kobayashi finished his latest video documentary, titled Neroi, meaning The Curse. Soon after that, his house burned down inexplicably, and his wife's remains were found in the ruin. Kobayashi, however, was not found and was declared missing. What we're about to see, then, is his last video project that he completed, Neroi. It starts with a quote from Kobayashi himself, reading, "I want the truth. No matter how terrifying, I want the truth." In November of 2002, Kobayashi pays a visit to Kogane, a municipality of Tokyo, to speak with a housewife about some strange sounds she's been hearing coming from her neighbor's house for a couple of months. Specifically, they sound like babies, and she says that a woman in her 40s and her young son live there. The only time she ever saw the boy, however, was when they moved in 6 months ago, and the woman goes out rarely. Kobayashi, of course, heads over to the neighbor's house, finding the yard in disarray, and when he knocks on the door, the woman abruptly opens it and stares at him. Despite his polite tone, she begins yelling at him about how he's speaking to her before slamming the door closed. Left with a dead end, Kobayashi departs, although the cameraman manages to spot the face of a young boy staring out a window before the curtain is closed. Kobayashi manages to record the audio of the strange sounds and takes it to an analyst to decipher. After processing it and cleaning it up, it does indeed sound like a baby crying, but upon closer examination, it seems like it's actually the voices of more than 5 babies crying. Kobayashi returns to the housewife, who informs him that several days after his first visit, the woman and the boy moved out, and she hasn't heard the strange sounds since. He decides to poke around the neighbor's yard, finding a piece of paper stating the woman's name to be Junko Ishii, and he also discovers the corpses of a number of pigeons. We're then informed that the housewife and her young daughter died 5 days after Kobayashi's second visit, after losing control of her car and heading into oncoming traffic. A number of months later, in August of 2003, a TV variety program aired a segment in which a handful of children are tested by a psychic to see if any of them possess psychic abilities. In the first test, the children are given a piece of paper and a sealed container, which contains a drawing on another piece of paper. The test is to draw what they can psychically see on the sealed piece of paper. Only one of the children manages to do so, a young girl named Kana Yano, who recreates the drawing of a double circle with 4 broken points, even making it to the proper scale. She then proceeds to successfully complete the next 3 similar tests. But on the fifth drawing test, rather than writing out the Cyrillic symbols from the sealed piece of paper, she draws a strange face. The next test is that of materialization, in which the children attempt to materialize water in an empty bottle. After some intense concentration, Kana manages to psychically manifest a small amount of water, although curiously, she also manifests what appears to be a hair. Taking it to a scientist, the program discovers that the water contained animal plankton, suggesting that it is fresh water from a river or a lake. As for the hair, it could be human hair, but since it lacks medulla development, it could be from a newborn baby. A few weeks after the program aired, Kobayashi pays a visit to Kana's family, with her mother saying that she's had a slight fever ever since doing those tests, and she's been spending a lot of time in bed, resting. The doctors couldn't find anything wrong, and they're very concerned, worried that she exhausted her powers doing that test. We're then shown some unused footage from another variety show, recorded in late October. A comedy duo are heading out at night to a shrine, a popular ghost hunting spot, and they're joined by an actress, Marika Matsumoto. Marika remarks that ever since she was a child, she's seen apparitions and has a sixth sense. As they approach the shrine, she feels a tingle on the back of her neck, and then says that she feels something really strange in a nearby group of trees. The duo are wary, but she presses forward, finding a small group of dead trees surrounded by living ones. One of the trees appears to be notably lumpy and dripping with a sticky substance, but when one of the two reaches forward to touch it, Marika exclaims for him to stop. She then turns around and starts to leave before suddenly turning again, stating that she heard something, a low voice, like a man's. She appears distressed, despite the comedy duo's confusion. They tell her that there's nothing there, before she suddenly doubles over and begins writhing on the ground, screaming. The TV crew rush in to help, and the cameras shut off. That footage wasn't used for the program, but Marika was given a copy of it, which she took onto a horror-related talk show a month later, joined by Kobayashi. There, she says that it's embarrassing to watch, but she does mention that the voice she heard was very low and sounded like it was calling her. She doesn't remember anything after hearing it. The host of the talk show then announces that they have a special guest to examine Marika's condition, a psychic named Mitsuo Hori. Hori emerges wearing an outfit composed of aluminum foil, and he appears to be rather disoriented, constantly twitching. He steps onto the stage as the host explains that he possesses unique psychic abilities and is engaged in activities to protect humanity from ectoplasmic worms. Hori then suddenly lunges at Marika, shouting that she's in trouble and to watch out for the pigeons. The crew drag him off while Marika appears to be highly distressed. Later, Kobayashi meets with the director of the variety show, who explains that when he gave the unused footage to Marika, he left something out, as he didn't want to spook her. Right before she collapses and begins screaming, she says that there are so many of them, although she doesn't know what they are. She then suddenly turns and looks back out across the trees, finding nothing there, but a moment prior, the camera had picked something up. Standing amidst the trees is a ghostly figure. Kobayashi meets with Marika to show her the clip, which does indeed spook her, and she remarks that she's not sure if it's related, but she's been drawing things unconsciously ever since the video shoot at the shrine. She shows him a page from her planner, which contains a scribbled image of a pattern consisting of circles and lines. In early December, Kobayashi heads back to Kanayano's home, finding her in high spirits. Her mother says that her fever ended some time ago, but now she's beginning to act strangely. She talks with someone in her room, even when there's no one there. Kobayashi asks Kana about this, but her response is quite odd. She says that she guesses it's too late for all of us. When he asks what she means, she says nothing. Later, during dinner, the head of Kana's spoon suddenly falls off, and various plates and bowls begin to slide off the table. She then clutches her head and yells, forcing her parents to take her out of the room, leaving Kobayashi bewildered as the head of the spoon continues to spin on the table. We're then shown footage from another variety show, aired on December 9th, in which a presenter went to interview a psychic, Mr. Hori. The presenter refers to him as a super psychic, but when she asks one of his neighbors about him, the neighbor instead refers to him as a psycho. The comment worries the presenter slightly, but she presses on, finding his home to be covered in writing, and Hori abruptly answers the door. When she asks if he's the psychic, he haltingly admits that he is, and then simply gestures her inside. She hesitates, but he insists, so she heads in, finding the interior coated entirely in aluminum foil. There's also boxes upon boxes of flyers, which Hori explains that he's been receiving dangerous messages for years from space. He can see the future, and there's many bad guys, ectoplasmic worms, that feed on humans. Later in December, Kana goes missing, and Kobayashi heads back to her home to interview her parents. They tell him that for about a week before she disappeared, she received repeated visits from a man wearing an outfit covered with aluminum foil. They had no idea what he was talking about, but for some reason, Kana assured them that the man was of no threat to her. On the day that she disappeared, they found a strange flyer on her bed with the word HELP scribbled on it in Kana's handwriting, alongside a pattern of circles and lines. With an obvious lead, Kobayashi travels to Hori's home to interview him, stating that they met on that talk show some time ago. Hori gestures him inside, and Kobayashi asks about the aluminum. Hori's explanation is that it protects him from the tingling because the ectoplasmic worms are near. When asked about the worms, Hori gestures to one of his flyers and says that the worms eat people and multiply. He then moans Kana's name and says that she was eaten as well. Kobayashi presses him for info about Kana, asking where she is, but Hori just says that he lost track of where she is. He then lunges for Kobayashi's bag, pulling out the flyer from her bed. Hori erratically begins gesturing and drawing on a blank piece of paper, appearing to be in a psychic trance. He states that he sees a blue building with galvanized iron sheets and a parking lot. He draws a very crude map, but complains about the worms coming out, and says that there's a young man. He then points in a direction, but when Kobayashi pulls out a local map, Hori ignores it, and shouts the word Kagutaba. He then begins shouting and tossing things around as the video footage becomes corrupted, showing a multitude of small blue faces. Kobayashi hastily leaves with the crude map, and his cameraman shows him the strange video corruption. Kobayashi proceeded to try and use the limited information and crude map to find the location that Hori described, but it was difficult. During the process, he's contacted by Marika and meets with her in her apartment, where she shows him a series of loops in wool that she's been making unconsciously in her sleep. She has no explanation for it, and she's scared to fall asleep now, but Kobayashi sets up a video camera for her in her room to record anything she might do at night. During the night, she gets up from her bed, stands still for a short while, and then grabs a cord from an appliance before heading out onto her balcony. She later comes back into the room without the cord and goes back to bed. In the morning, Marika says that she doesn't remember any of it, and they find the cord tied into a series of loops out on the balcony. Also on the video is a strange banging sound, which the two hear during the day. Marika explains that the girl who lives above her is a fellow actress, so they head up to talk to her. The girl, however, has no knowledge of the banging sound, and claims to have not even heard it. Kobayashi asks her if she's experienced anything strange lately, or felt inexplicably sick, but the girl says that nothing strange has been going on in her life. Kobayashi doesn't have any answers for Marika, so he continues his search for the blue building, eventually finding a small apartment building that seems to be an exact match. Hori also designated one of the windows of the building in particular, so Kobayashi knocks on the door. He gets no response, but he can hear some banging noise from inside, so he asks one of the neighbors about the man living there. The neighbor says that he rarely sees him, but he's often talking to himself, and he also makes that banging sound. Kobayashi asks if he's seen him with a young girl recently, but the neighbor hasn't. Kobayashi comes back the next day, and they spot a number of pigeons hanging out exclusively on the man's balcony, so he tells his cameraman to stay in the car and keep the camera pointed at the balcony. While he heads back to the door, the man emerges out onto his balcony, calmly grabbing one of the pigeons by the neck and taking it back inside. We're informed that a few days later, the man disappeared. With another dead lead, Kobayashi takes the video of Marika's nighttime activity to the same audio analyst from before, as there's a strange sound on it, aside from the banging. The analyst processes the audio, showing the sound to be a man's voice saying the word Kagutaba, the same word that Hori shouted before kicking Kobayashi out. Kobayashi plays the cleaned up audio for Marika, who says that it sounds like the same voice that she heard at the shrine that night. She has no idea what or who Kagutaba is, however, so Kobayashi begins making a large number of calls to various professionals to ask if any of them have ever heard of the word Kagutaba. After a series of disappointments, he gets a lead from a doctor who says that he believes he saw it in a book somewhere. Upon meeting with him, the man found the book, an ethnological document compiled by the Tokita County Office, which sounds like a bit of a dry read. In the book, it mentions that there used to be a village called Shimokage Village, which resides at the bottom of a dam. Before its demise, the villagers had a strange custom called the Demon Ritual. It was performed to pacify a demon called Kagutaba. Kobayashi asks if Kagutaba is a demon then, but the doctor says that more likely the word demon was used conveniently for an unknown entity. He then shows Kobayashi a 200-year-old document that also mentions Kagutaba, comprised of the kanji characters for disaster, tool, and spirit, a tool that's capable of causing disasters. A long time ago in Shimokage Village, there was a group of sorcerers who migrated from the west, and they developed a type of sorcery called Shimokage's Way. One of their spells was called the Kagutaba Method, involving summoning Kagutaba to send it to an adversary in order to put him under a deadly spell. In one incident, however, when a sorcerer summoned Kagutaba, it disobeyed the sorcerer and began doing evil things on its own. The sorcerer managed to perform another spell which confined Kagutaba deep underground. Since the village was submerged as part of the construction of a dam in 1978, the demon ritual was discontinued. Kobayashi gets in touch with a local historian to find out more about the demon ritual, who explains that the ritual was never performed publicly, but the last ritual performed in 1978 was filmed by a production company contracted by Mr. Ishii, the priest. They were recorded on 16mm films, and the historian pleaded with the Ishii family for them, which he in turn transferred to a VHS tape. He explains that Shimokage Village was a community of sorcerers, and the displaced villagers still believe in sorcery, keeping a sickle at the door to keep away evil spirits. On the tape, a number of protest signs against the building of the dam are seen, along with a number of dogs, which the historian explains were used by the sorcerers in their rituals, which is why the villagers still have dogs. The footage shows the demon shrine where the ritual was performed, and the ritual begins with an individual dressed in a strange mask stepping out of the shrine. The historian explains that this figure represents Kagutaba, and the ritual is to pacify the demon. Kagutaba takes a child from the crowd and ties them up to a post in the middle of the platform, dancing around them, representing Kagutaba's rampage. Then the priest appears to pacify the demon, rescuing the child in the process. The historian explains that the priest performs a very distinctive bow, with one bow, four claps, and one last bow. It's only done this way at this shrine. The two dance around one another for a short while before the priest performs the bow, at which point the woman playing the part of Kagutaba suddenly begins writhing and screaming, forcing them to stop the ritual. The villagers said that she was possessed, and some said that because of the dam, the ritual wouldn't be performed again, angering Kagutaba. They believed that it was some kind of curse. Kobayashi remarks that he would like to speak with Mr. Ishii, the priest, but the historian says that shortly after giving him the film, he and his wife died from an illness, leaving their daughter behind. She was the possessed woman in the film, and she in fact recently moved back here from Tokyo. She is, of course, Junko Ishii, and she now lives with her son in the Ishii house. With a solid lead, but no clear picture of the whole puzzle, Kobayashi drives out to the village where she lives, alongside most of the other displaced villagers from Shimokage. He sees a number of dogs on the way in, and upon approaching Ishii's house, finds it covered in hundreds of loops made from various materials, resembling the patterns that Marika and Kana drew. He also finds the pattern itself etched onto the walls of the building, and he remarks, somewhat obviously, that this must have some connection. He proceeds to knock on the front door, and he's abruptly greeted by Ishii in the same way as their first meeting, as she shoves the cameraman back and closes the door. Kobayashi visits some of her neighbors' homes, finding sickles above their doors and dogs in their yards, but he gets no response from any of them until he travels further into the village. The woman he speaks to says that the Ishii house has been strange ever since the daughter returned, and he should stay away from it for his own sake. He then speaks with a man who slams the door shut upon hearing the name Ishii, but another woman invites him into her home to chat, with her turning out to be a good friend of Junko's before she moved out. Junko had left to go to nursing school in Tokyo, and the woman says that she used to be perfectly normal and friendly. She changed after the demon ritual and started to act strangely, telling her friend that during the ritual, she had heard God's voice and she had to obey his words. When Kobayashi asks her if she thinks that it's Kagutaba's curse, however, the woman proceeds to silently stand up and walk out of the room. Kobayashi decides to do some more fact-finding about Ishii and travels to the nursing school she attended to ask some questions. He's told that after she graduated, she got a job at an obstetric clinic, which has since closed. He speaks with one of her former co-workers, who tells him that Ishii was a very hard-working woman, but quiet in a spooky sort of way. The woman remarks that the clinic they worked for performed abortions up until the 22nd week of pregnancy, breaking the law, but Ishii was in charge of disposing of the aborted embryos. There was a rumor that she took the embryos home, but Kobayashi is left wondering if the rumor was true and for what purpose. Later, in February of 2004, Kobayashi meets with Marika again, who tells him that her neighbor who lived upstairs committed suicide in the park. She hanged herself alongside a number of other strangers, and Marika blames herself. Kobayashi asked his wife to take care of Marika, allowing her to live in his house, as she's too scared to leave her apartment. We're shown some news footage of the incident, in which seven men and one woman were found dead in a park, hanging from the swings with ropes tied into a series of loops. Among the deceased is also the man with the pigeons, so Kobayashi heads back to the apartment to speak with his neighbor again. The man tells him that when the guy first moved in, he was perfectly normal and friendly, but some time ago, he began to have a lot of arguments with one of his other neighbors, a tough, middle-aged woman. Eventually, the woman moved out, as she felt scared, and the man says that the guy complained a lot about the sound of her baby, despite her not having a baby. It was just her and her young son. Kobayashi shows the man a picture of Ishii, and he confirms that that's her. We're then shown some more news footage from a few days later, showing that Kana's father had stabbed her mother to death and confessed it to the police, although he has not said why. Kana has still not been found after nearly 2 months, and the police have no leads. In a home video taken by Kobayashi's wife, Marika is shown serving her special spaghetti dish for lunch, and she seems in high spirits. When she gets up, however, she suddenly begins standing still with her head tilted, and she's groaning in a low voice. Birds begin slamming into one of the windows, and Marika collapses on the ground. After recovering, she shows no memory of the incident, but she seems deeply concerned. She opens the window, exclaiming as she sees a number of dead pigeons on the ground outside. She tells Kobayashi and his wife that she believes she is the next one to die, to which Kobayashi says that he is going to return to Ishii and get her to talk to them in order to solve this mystery. Marika remarks that Hori told her to watch out for pigeons, perhaps meaning that they were a sign of death. Kobayashi then says that they should visit him and ask about it. So they do, bringing along the tape of his second encounter with Ishii. Upon seeing her face on the video, Hori panics and begins whimpering, so they're left with no further answers. Marika then tells him to take her to the dam where the demon ritual was performed, as she wants to try to perform the ritual herself and see what it does for her. Kobayashi vehemently refuses, as that ritual might have caused Ishii's possession, and says that if the ritual is ultimately necessary, then he'll go and do it himself. Marika says that she doesn't want to die, and she has to do it, causing Kobayashi to hesitatingly agree. He'll also visit Mr. Hori again and try to enlist his help in lifting the curse. Hori agrees, making them a bit of an odd trio, but they return to the village where Ishii lives, now finding it utterly devoid of dogs. They continue driving, near to where Shimokage Village used to be, and then take a rowboat across the lake to reach the point where the shrine was, although they leave Hori behind. Upon reaching the approximate spot, Marika begins performing the ritual, cutting a length of cloth with a sickle and then performing the distinctive bow. After she finishes, she smiles and says that she feels better and lighter. With the two pleased that the ritual seems to have solved things, it seems like their troubles are over. But back on the dam, Hori begins panicking and yells for them to get back to shore, as the worms will eat them. They rush back to shore, and he says that they need to get off of the mountain before pointing in a direction and moaning Kana's name. He then runs off, and Kobayashi grabs a camera and follows after him, while Marika and the cameraman go back to the car. Hori continues to rush into the woods, calling Kana's name, while Marika and the cameraman begin driving down the mountain as she clutches at the back of her neck. As the sun goes down, Hori is continuing to move rapidly through the woods, and Marika begins groaning with her eyes closed in the car. Hori and Kobayashi come across a number of dead dogs, but Hori continues moving, until they soon see a string placed around a series of trees and covered in feathers. Kobayashi steps past the string, finding dozens of slain dogs, as Hori yells for him not to go in there. Marika continues groaning in a trance, as the cameraman repeatedly asks if she's okay, until he eventually pulls over. When he tries to snap her out of it, she screams and attacks him, running off into the darkness. The cameraman attempts to follow her, as Hori and Kobayashi find an abandoned and destroyed shrine in the woods. Hori moans that Kana is in there, as the cameraman finds Marika on the ground, screaming in terror. Kobayashi worriedly remarks on how ancient this shrine is, and then sees a rock bearing the same pattern that he's seen from Marika, Kana, and Ishii. Hori then begins screaming and pointing at something, so Kobayashi turns off his camera's light and turns on the night vision. He sees the ghostly image of Kana slowly sinking into a mass of deformed fetuses, but when he turns the light back on, there's nothing there. Hori, however, is gripped in some sort of trance, unable to move, as Marika suddenly snaps out of hers. Eventually, they took both Marika and Hori to a local hospital, and then they went back to Ishii's house, but this time received no response. Determined for answers after all this time, Kobayashi manages to get in through a window, finding the interior in complete disarray. He does find a number of live pigeons, along with another dead dog, and the upstairs is filled with hundreds of more loops hanging from the ceiling, alongside the corpse of Ishii herself. Near her are hundreds of crude Kagutaba masks and dead pigeons, but they also find the young boy she lived with, sitting next to Kana, now deceased. The boy is unresponsive, and the two call the police to handle all this, with us being informed that, while he was initially believed to be her son, it was later determined that he wasn't. Kobayashi decides to adopt the boy, and we're shown a home video from shortly after, in which the boy eats with them but is still unresponsive. Kobayashi also meets with Marika again, commenting on how healthy she looks now, and she says that things have been good, with nothing strange occurring since. A few days later, Mr. Hori was committed to an institution, with no visitors allowed. In mid-March, Kobayashi meets with the local historian again, who tells him that he began looking around for anything more related to Kagutaba, and he found an old scroll in his grandfather's collection. The scroll depicts the Kagutaba ritual the sorcerers used, showing images of monkeys and dogs, as the sorcerers sacrificed the baby monkeys and offered them to the medium to eat. Kobayashi speculates that Junko Ishii had used Kana as a medium, and fed her the aborted babies she took from the clinic in order to resurrect Kagutaba. Now that Ishii's dead, however, they'll never know the truth, but he hopes that the Kagutaba curse has been contained. With that, the documentary for Noroi ends, but of course, there's still the matter of the house fire. 2 days after Noroi was completed, Kobayashi's house burned down with his wife still inside, and he went missing. 3 days after the fire, Hori, who had escaped from the institution, was found dead in a duct. A month later, The company that handled publishing Kobayashi's works received a package, with the sender listed as Masafumi Kobayashi. Inside, they found a video camera, along with a tape. The tape contains footage from Kobayashi filmed in his home, as Hori suddenly shows up on his doorstep, moaning that Kobayashi has been eaten by worms. He can hear Kana in his head saying that Kagutaba is alive, but Kobayashi insists that Ishii is dead and Kagutaba is contained. When Kobayashi's wife asks if she should call the police, Hori rushes at her with a rock, but then grabs the young boy. He hits him multiple times in the head with the rock and says that he killed Kana, as Kobayashi pleads with him to stop. The boy remains mute, even as Hori continues to attack him, throwing Kobayashi off. He and his wife scramble away, but when they turn back, the boy is standing there, his face resembling a Kagutaba mask for a moment. Hori continues to moan Kana's name, as Kobayashi's wife begins groaning in a trance. Hori then knocks Kobayashi in the head with the rock, before taking the boy's hand and leading him out of the house. Kobayashi's wife then calmly walks over to another room and douses herself in gasoline. Kobayashi pleads with her, unable to stand, as she lights herself on fire and begins screaming. The flames soon engulf the house, forcing Kobayashi to flee. We're finally informed that Masafumi Kobayashi is still missing to this day. In the end, Kobayashi got a bit too much truth, delving into a world that he certainly wasn't prepared for. Kagutaba's identity and capabilities are left deliberately vague, but it seems capable of taking control of practically anyone it wishes, spreading chaos and death in its wake. Noroi is in some ways typical of what we expect from a found footage horror movie, with characters way out of their depth, continuing to film horrific encounters with no logical reason to do so, but in other ways it's quite atypical. It's a slow burn, with quite a handful of characters, including some that only show up for a few lines of dialogue, and often fits more into the role of a mockumentary, if not for the more guerrilla method of filming. It's a delightfully creepy film, and while it's hard to say how many people out there believed that it was depicting true events, its general VHS quality only continues to make it a bit creepier as the years go by.